Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
A note of warning. This podcast explores graphic and disturbing stories and includes strong language. It therefore may not be suitable for our young listeners or other folks who may find it disturbing. Hello and welcome to True Crime Daily, the podcast, bringing you this week's latest in high-profile and under-the-radar cases across the country for the week of May 17th, 2019. I'm Billy Jensen, and this is Owen Michael.
Hello.
This week, a college professor is found dead in a bizarre case in Georgia. A carnival worker is accused of a three-week killing spree in Virginia. An airline pilot is arrested for triple murder in a Kentucky airport, and an Uber driver is arrested in Pittsburgh. But first, gruesome details are coming to light about a pregnant mother who went missing in Chicago. Owen, what's going on in the Ochoa Lopez case?
This is developing by the hour this week. You may or may not have heard about this this case, which is why we're here to tell you about it. This is Marlon Ochoa Lopez. She was 9 months pregnant when she was last seen on April 23rd. After classes that Tuesday, April 23rd, at a charter school in Chicago, the 19-year-old woman drove to a house on West 77th Place in the city, about 9 miles away from where she was taking classes. She had been communicating with a 46-year-old woman on a Facebook group and had arranged to pick up some items for her baby. She wrote, Marlon Ochoa Lopez wrote to this woman as part of this group, "Due to the fact that I'm in school right now and can't work at the moment, I can't afford to buy the rest of the things since I'm short on cash right now," Marlon wrote. Marlon was married with a 3-year-old son. She was looking for a double stroller and baby clothes. The 46-year-old woman told Marlon that her own daughter has all brand new boy clothes her son never wore, according to a screenshot of the conversation provided by the family of Marlon to the Chicago Tribune. The woman told Marlon her daughter had two baby showers. She was happy to share. She had a lot of items that were never used. Marlon Ochoa Lopez did not pick up her 3-year-old son from daycare that afternoon, April 23rd, the Chicago Sun-Times reports.
So neighbors said that on the same day, April 23rd, at about 6 p.m., a 46-year-old woman who lives at the house on 77th Place came out into the yard screaming that she had just delivered a baby boy who wasn't breathing. That's according to neighbors, who reportedly thought that was odd, since no one seemed to know that this woman had been pregnant. Paramedics arrived and found the baby, and this is their quote, basically blue, according to the Chicago Fire Department. That child was hospitalized in critical condition. Paramedics stayed with a woman at the scene, and she was taken to a hospital as a precaution, though she said she was not experiencing cramps, bleeding, or dizziness. The department said there was no cause for suspicion at the time. Now, the residents at 77th Place then reportedly set up a GoFundMe page to raise funds for the newborn's health care costs, seeking $9,000. Now, that page has since been taken down, but this 46-year-old woman was listed as the organizer. Marlene's due date was May 5th. Now, on May 8th, 2 weeks after she went missing, Marlene's Honda Civic, was found parked about 0.3 miles just around the block from the residence at West 77th Place, where all this had taken place. It had parking tickets on the car, and the Tribune reports neighbors had seen the car around the neighborhood.
So on Wednesday of this week, Marlon's family said that police told them the DNA tests confirmed the baby boy that was born at this residence, or that was taken from this residence, was indeed Marlon's. The family's been visiting the boy in the hospital since then. They've named him Giovanni Yadiel Lopez. He's in grave condition and is listed as brain dead. The day before, this is Tuesday, police were seen at the house on West 77th Place interviewing residents there. Four people, two men and two women, as well as evidence containers, were seen being taken away by officers. Later that night, just after midnight on Wednesday, in fact, a body was found in the back area of the property on 77th Place, reportedly in a trash bin. Then at about 6:15 p.m. Wednesday, the Cook County Medical Examiner's Office announced the body was Marlon Ochoa Lopez. Her cause of death was ligature strangulation, according to the medical examiner, and her death was ruled a homicide. Thursday, Chicago police said Marlon had been killed on April 23rd, that day that she went to this residence. The baby was cut from her womb after she was murdered, according to police. Police said the baby was identified through his father's DNA. They had asked Marlon's family for dental records to help identify the body, which it's some indications there. Chicago police said charges could be brought against four suspects that are in custody as soon as today or Friday of this week. As I say, new details have been coming forth in this case all week. We're recording this on Thursday night, so things are subject to change as this investigation continues in Chicago.
Yeah, and this reminds us of that story out of Colorado. In 2016, Dinell Lane, who was convicted of cutting an unborn baby out of the mother's womb, in the same sort of scenario, responding to an online ad for maternity clothes.
We also had something that you remember a colleague of ours worked on, Savannah Graywind, I believe her name was, out of one of the Dakotas. I think it was North Dakota. She similarly was basically accosted by a neighbor, and that neighbor tried to basically kill her, and they got the baby out and did this. So this is a thing that happens.
Yeah, it is. And you know, the woman out of Colorado in 2016, she was sentenced to 100 years just to know, you know, what potentially is coming. The only tears you shed during the trial were those of self-pity. This is what the judge said: to the sound of your own voice as your lies were slowly revealed. You know, it was it's one of the worst crimes that you could think
beyond,
of.
And it
keeps happening.
How you think that anybody could physically do this to another human being is bad enough. Also, like, how do you think you would ever get away with something like this? I mean, you know, we cover plenty of crimes that you're just like, how did you think you were going to get away with this? But this kind of step, doing that that level of gratuitous violence is just it's hard to fathom.
Yeah.
So leading into our next case.
Marion Shockley in Georgia. So Baldwin County Sheriff's deputies responded to a 911 call about 100 miles southeast of Atlanta late Saturday night, actually around 1 a.m. Sunday morning, in Milledgeville, which is 30 miles northeast of Macon, Georgia. Mm-hmm. Deputies arrived at the house and found three naked people out back at the pool. The woman was unconscious, and the two men were performing CPR on her. The two men said all three of them had been hanging out. One of the men said he had been swimming on the other side of the pool as Marianne Shockley, a 43-year-old professor of entomology, which is insects, at the University of Georgia, was in the hot tub. The other man had gone from the yard into the woods to collect firewood for about 15 minutes, during which Shockley reportedly began drowning, he told deputies. Marcus Lillard, 41, had been dating Marianne Shockley. He said when he came back to the pool area, he found Shockley passed out in the hot tub.
So deputies found Marianne Shockley bleeding severely from her head. Lillard, the boyfriend, told them that he had slipped and fallen while he was taking her out of the hot tub, and that caused her head injury and was causing her to bleed profusely. The other man, 69-year-old Clark Heindel, was the homeowner. He said he rushed over to help, and they began CPR on the woman. Heindel is a retired psychologist who now owns a yoga studio, and Lillard, the boyfriend, was a car salesman before he quit earlier this month. An incident report said that Clark stated Marianne appeared to be breathing faintly, so they assumed she was coming back into consciousness and did not immediately call 911. The men said they called 911 about 45 minutes later. Marianne Shockley was clearly dead when deputies arrived. It had rained heavily that night, Saturday night, saturating the woods and any potential kindling.
Yeah.
Deputies also noted in their report that there was already a large stack of firewood near the pool. Deputies said EMTs had noted that the two men's behavior was, quote, peculiar. Marianne's glasses were found near the shallow end of the pool. They had blood on them. There were two areas in the grass nearby that were soaked with blood, according to WMAZ-TV in the area.
Yeah, so the first thing you're going to do in a case like this is you're going to separate the two guys.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to ask them questions and see what are the inconsistencies. One of them is going to turn over on the other.
Particularly, you know, right off the bat, it's raining out. Why are you going around looking for firewood? You know, there's some red flags right off the bat.
So deputies separated the two men for questioning, placing the boyfriend Marcus in the patrol car and placing Clark Heindel on the porch because it was his house. As one deputy looked for Marianne's purse, he noticed Clark had gone inside the house. He knocked on the door, then heard a shotgun blast. Clark Heindel had killed himself in his house, shooting himself in the head. That was... I never want to be critical of someone's job, but that's probably not the best police work, letting him go into the house, because he could have come out blasting too. So, you know.
It's true. From what I read, apparently there was a little bit of commotion at the scene because the EMTs were there, and somehow he had slipped into the thing. But
So Clark and Marcus had apparently been friends for years. Marcus had started dating Marianne several months ago. Marianne was a mother with two children. Marcus Lillard was arrested at the scene for a state probation violation. Now, officials say Clark's suicide is not an indication of guilt in this case. He could have just been distraught. Who knows what was going on. Marcus Lillard did not make a confession as such, said the sheriff, but other evidence led to his arrest. On Monday, Lillard was charged with assault, murder, and concealing a death, and he was held without bond. The Baldwin County Sheriff said the investigation revealed that Marcus had been texting and calling friends for 2 hours prior to dialing 911 at about 11:15 p.m. Saturday, asking, quote, how to get somebody back to life and asking how to perform CPR.
We should say as well that the preliminary autopsy stated that Marianne Shockley died from strangulation. So there's all sorts of weird factors here as far as what happened. But I can imagine that this guy, as I say, it's speculation. Maybe he was sort of knew that the story was off and didn't want to go through and felt terrible guilt with it and was witness. He was basically the only other person who knew what was
or
going
is he
on.
Is he setting up an alibi potentially, trying to say that, oh, look, I was trying to help, but if you would do that, why wouldn't you have just called 911 right away? It's just all very strange.
There's only one guy that knows what happened, and he is he's charged with murder.
Yeah. Well, the other guy, because the other guy killed himself.
Right. Yeah. So in our next case, we've got James Michael Wright in Virginia. He's a 23-year-old carnival worker. He ran a pony ride as a subcontractor for the James H. Drew Exposition, a carnival that travels up and down the East Coast. James Wright drove his pickup truck into a school bus on the morning of March 19th this year. He had veered over the center line in Johnson County, Virginia, and struck the school bus head-on. No kids were injured, but Wright was airlifted to a hospital with a broken arm, hip, and leg. He was recovering in a wheelchair in his mobile home in Mendota, Virginia, near the state's borders with West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, and North Carolina, when police went to visit him 3 days later. Two officers from Johnson City, Tennessee, had traveled to Virginia to interview Wright about a 25-year-old woman named Athena Hobson. She was reported missing earlier in March. Wright was reportedly the last person seen with Hobson. He told the officers he had hired Hobson to clean his house, but that he had dropped her off at her cousin's house just before he crashed into the school bus. Hobson's cousin said that never happened. She had never been dropped off. Wright gave consent for them to search his room in the home, where they found items belonging to another woman who later became part of the investigation. That interview led to a warrant for a search of James Wright's demolished truck. Athena Hobson's cell phone was found inside that truck.
Then that led to a search of Wright's house and the property around the house. And on or near the property, investigators found two dead bodies, one in a shallow grave, another underneath a pile of logs. They were identified as 22-year-old Elizabeth Van Meter of Tennessee and 17-year-old Jocelyn Alsup of Georgia. Autopsies are still pending. Authorities say James Wright confessed on May 9th to murdering three people. Elizabeth Van Meter, the 22-year-old, was last seen in February. Some of the stuff that was found in her room had the name on it. She was reported missing on March 17th by a woman who said Van Meter had left with a man named James Wright. Family members said Van Meter met Wright at the carnival, where she said to have hung out. Wright reportedly confessed that he got into an argument with her and shot her on February 28th and buried her outside his home. Van Meter's family says she was cognitively disabled with the mental capacity of a 13-year-old, according to the Washington Post. And Wright said the shooting was an accident.
So the 17-year-old, Jocelyn Alsop, was reported missing on March 8th. She reportedly met Wright at the North Georgia State Fair, where her father worked. She apparently traveled with Wright back to his home. He told police he and Alsop had sex in the woods near his residence on March 9th, where he shot her. He said he had been trying to shoot an animal, but accidentally struck her instead. Mm-hmm. He then allegedly placed her body underneath a stack of logs near the house. Police think that Athena Howson, the 25-year-old, met James Wright at the traveling carnival as well. Her family said they were struggling financially and that Wright would periodically come by to pick up Athena to clean his house for money, then drop her back off at her Tennessee apartment, which is about 40 miles south of his Virginia residence. Wright reportedly confessed that he and Athena were going for a walk in the woods when he tripped and shot her in the head. He told police he tripped again and accidentally shot her again. So he told them that he tripped twice and shot her twice, both accidentally. This is the third time. Yeah. Athena Hobson's remains have not yet been located. Wright claims that he put her in the back of his truck after accidentally shooting her twice to take her to the hospital. But on the way, she rolled out of the truck bed onto a river embankment where he says he got out and he put her body in the water, realizing she was dead.
The Washington County Sheriff said they are working with the carnival to check other locations for other possible missing persons in those areas. He said they consider James Wright a serial killer, which he is. He used a .22 caliber rifle in each of the three shootings, authorities say. This individual killed three women in an 18-day period, said Sheriff Fred Newman. The accident he had 2 days after the last killing certainly put an end to that series of incidents. He said they don't believe Wright intended to harm himself in the crash. Now, James Wright is charged with 3 counts of capital murder and concealing a dead body. He's held without bail, and prosecutors have said they may seek the death penalty in the case. This was the second of two. Well, first of all, the stories that this guy's coming up with and the excuses, the tripping,
it's a lot of accidental shooting.
Accidental shooting and tripping with a rifle too, not just
you're carrying around a little rifle. It sure seems handy. He's a very klutz, accident prone. I'm wondering about this head on crash. You know, the police say they don't think that he did it on purpose, but it's who can say whether it's guilt or whether he was just not paying attention. He happens to hit a school bus, mm-hmm. so almost seems like a sociopathic behavior. Mm-hmm. But in one sense, A, thank goodness none of the kids were hurt, and B, thank goodness he got in this accident because that seems to have, A, helped get some details going in this investigation for authorities as well as stopped him in whatever.
No, as soon as you hear school bus serial killer, you go and, you think back to Dirty Harry. Remember Dirty Harry? Remember he was a serial killer, killing people with a rifle, and then he carjacks a school bus with all these kids.
Clint Eastwood. Younger viewers.
Yes. But this was not the only carnival story. We had another carnival story. Was Carnival Mafia.
A so-called Carnival Mafia.
Now, we're going to get into whether there is one or not. She pled guilty in the Kansas Fair vendor's death. So a Texas woman admitted her role in the deaths of a couple who were killed at a Kansas Fair after one suspect ordered the killings as part of a, quote, Carnival Mafia initiation. And her name is Christine Tenney, and this came from KFSM. She was 39. She pled guilty to aggravated robbery and obstruction of justice. She was charged after the July 2018 deaths of Alfred Sonny Carpenter and Pauline Carpenter at the Barton County Fair in Kansas, where they were vendors. And investigators with investigators say there is no Carnival Mafia.
So far. Yeah. Never say never.
Yeah. I mean, well, we've got a serial killer and we got this other thing going on.
Nothing strikes fear into your heart like thinking about a murder initiation into a carnival mafia. That's got a lot of elements I don't want to be part of.
Yeah.
But, can't remember the last time I went to a carnival.
There was a carnival over there on Moore Park and I almost went over to it and then it was gone. And I was like, because I love playing the games.
Yeah.
And I actually once did a interview with like talking to the carnies, and I did a story about it. And it was a carnival, but also had a freak show area too. And it was it was incredibly interesting. But you know, the lifestyle is very much it's a transient population. You're moving from one place to another.
Drifter.
And you are, you know, he was telling me some of the stuff. This one guy, I remember his name is Dutchman. Just call me Dutchman. And he ran the BB gun thing. You know the BB gun one where they have the star and then you got to shoot out, which is like really impossible to do?
Right.
He was telling me how, you know, one guy once shot him with the BB gun, mm-hmm. like all this kind of stuff that was mm-hmm. that goes on. And yeah, not necessarily the best stuff that you're going to see out there in the car.
On the other hand, you do get to pick your own nickname.
You do, I guess, yeah. Yeah.
Our next story is out of Kentucky. Similar region there. No carnival in this one. This is about a man called Christian Kit Martin, who's 51 years old. He's a pilot for an American Airlines subsidiary called PSA Airlines, which is a part of the American Eagle brand for our few frequent travelers. Christian Martin was arrested at Louisville's Muhammad Ali International Airport on Saturday, May 11th. Martin is accused of killing three people in Kentucky in 2015. On November 18th, 2015, a 59-year-old man named Calvin Phillips was found shot to death in the cellar of his house in Pembroke, Kentucky. Phillips' wife, Pamela, and their neighbor, Edward Dansereau, were found in a burned-out car in a cornfield in the same area that same day. Christian Martin and the Phillips family were neighbors. When Christian Martin was on trial in a court-martial in December 2015. Martin was an Army major at the time. He was accused by several juvenile witnesses of physical and sexual abuse going back to 2008. He was also accused by his wife of mishandling classified information during his time in the Army. Christian Martin had served in the Army and the Army Reserves for about 30 years. He was accused of downloading, quotes, emails and a kill list, according to the Louisville Courier-Journal, while he was stationed in the Middle East.
Martin's neighbor, Calvin Phillips, was scheduled to testify that December. Martin had described Phillips as his star witness in the case. However, Phillips' adult son told CNN that his father had evidence harmful to Martin's case. Martin's attorney said Phillips' testimony would have helped Martin, though Martin was expected to be a witness both for the prosecution and for the defense. Calvin Phillips was killed before he could testify. Months later, in May of 2016, Christian Martin was acquitted of the sexual assault charges, but was found guilty of mishandling classified information and of two counts of simple assault. He was dismissed from the Army, the equivalent of a dishonorable discharge, and was sentenced to 90 days in jail. After that, Martin moved to North Carolina. In 2018, Martin began working as a pilot for American Airlines after passing a TSA background check. Apparently, a simple assault does not disqualify a potential pilot, the airline told CBS News, since it's not actually reported as a felony.
So, Christian Martin was arrested at the airport this weekend, about an hour before he was scheduled to fly a plane to Charlotte, North Carolina. His booking photo shows him still wearing his pilot's uniform. He's indicted on three counts of murder, counts of arson, burglary, and tampering with evidence as well. The indictment alleges Martin broke into the Phillips house in November 2015, shot and killed the three victims, then loaded the bodies of Pamela Phillips and Edward Dansereau into a car, which he allegedly then drove to a cornfield and set on fire. Martin was held for questioning after the crimes in 2015. A SWAT team even raided his house, but no charges were filed at the time. He's now scheduled to be arraigned on May 22nd. Incidentally, Christian Martin told WSMV that he and his wife had their marriage voided about 3 years before the murders because his wife was actually still married to another man. He also told the station he was sure this woman, his not-wife, was having an affair with Calvin Phillips, his neighbor. She later admitted to bigamy but denied any affair with Phillips. The Kentucky Attorney General has not elaborated on what brought about the recent indictment and Saturday's arrest, saying he couldn't comment on evidence.
Okay, we're going to go to Pittsburgh now. Richard Lomite, an Uber rideshare case out of Pittsburgh. Richard Lomite is a 36-year-old Penn State University professor, and he also drives an Uber. Lomite was arrested Saturday afternoon following an incident in which two women accused their Uber driver of harassment and false imprisonment. So at about 1:30 a.m. on Saturday, two women summoned an Uber for a trip from Homewood to Penn Hills, which is a distance about 45 miles in a north of Pittsburgh, according to the Pittsburgh police. Now, they were picked up by a man in a 2013 Ford Fusion, later identified as Richard Lomate. One of the women later told police that as they were driving, the driver ignored GPS map instructions on the app, then allegedly made repeated comments about how good the women looked. He allegedly told them that he was single and that he wanted to, quote, get with them.
As they approached their destination during this particular trip, Lomate allegedly pulled the vehicle over, put the car in park, locked the doors, and told the women, both the women, you're not going anywhere, according to the criminal complaint. The two women managed to escape the vehicle. It's unclear. They either slid out of a window or somehow managed to open the door. According to the police reports, that detail is not exactly clear, but they managed to get free. Police say one of the women then ran down the street yelling for help, looking for a bystander to call 911. This is late at night. Responding officers were unable to locate the vehicle at the scene, but the two women showed police their Uber app information about the ride, showing Richard Lomate's photograph along with his vehicle description and license plate number.
Yeah.
Police later located Lomate and arrested him on two charges each of harassment, kidnapping, and false imprisonment. Lomate was working as an assistant professor of information sciences and technology at a Penn State campus. He had previously worked as a part-time instructor at the University of Pittsburgh. He's no longer under contract there. Uber has since revoked his access to the app, and Penn State has barred him from campus.
I should hope so. So we're starting to see a lot of these cases. You know, when the case came up of the woman who got into a car that wasn't an Uber.
Josephson. Mm-hmm.
Yes. You know, what are the things that we're going to help with this? So people, you know, a lot of, you know, local TV stations are like, well, what can you do? The first thing is check the license plate number. That's always going to be the first thing. Then you get into the car and you kind of say, are you Donald? Are you whatever? But with this, those two things would have worked. Because it was the guy. It was the guy from the app.
He was legit.
The one thing, so you just don't know. You have no idea who you're getting into a car with. And also the child lock. If this was a child lock in there, another thing that they were showing us on those TV reports was to, before you get into the car, when you open up the door, check the child lock that's on the inside of the door and then flip it up.
Yeah. In the case of the Samantha Josephson, which was she was the University of South Carolina student who got into a car that she thought was her Uber, and the Uber driver allegedly murdered her within hours of being picked up. That one, the big push that they were going for was the What's My Name campaign that they wanted to, you know, make sure that you're always checking your app for the to match up the make and model of the car, as well as the license plate number, probably the most important thing, usually a photo of the person. But as you approach the car, it's not a bad idea to say, you know, if you're here to pick me up, what's my name? You tell me who I am before.
And I actually had a friend of mine, a female, who said that she got into an Uber and she went, what's my name? And he's like, no, what's my name? Like, it was going.
I've heard this. I've seen this on Twitter as well. Yeah. And some of the drivers are pushing back on this as well because, you know, this. I guess this could go
both ways. It could go both ways.
You know, these are sort of two different situations, unfortunately, ride sharing. You know, one thing is, am I getting into the right car? But even if I am getting into the right car, there's still enough cases out there where some of these dudes and people are bad people.
Yeah.
And this is one of those cases. But this one was caught, for his alleged crime. Alleged. He was caught right away because, you know, all that stuff. It was just kind of a dumb thing to do.
And they did the right thing, and they called the police, and they started it right then. So,
indeed.
We'll see, and we'll follow that case, and we'll be following that on truecrimedaily.com.
Always.
So now it's time for comments. We get comments. We get a lot of comments. This one.
Where do we get our comments?
We get our comments on Facebook. We also get them on YouTube, but I mainly pull from Facebook because the YouTube comments are a little bit of a shit show. So we're really going on Facebook more than less. There's a little bit more.
Profanity. Profanity does tend to, as you just heard, does spill over a little bit
into YouTube. But YouTube is also, unless you have some sort of an account, YouTube, you can comment anonymously.
This is true.
On Facebook, for most people, they're connected to that account. You know, and I could, if you said something that was outrageous, we could find, you know, go through and potentially find your employer. Well, that we would do that.
Don't edit yourself.
Don't edit yourself, though. But yes. But you know what? People behave a little bit more on Facebook than they behave on, say, Twitter or certainly YouTube.
This is true. And on Facebook, we do have more stories and more information than some of the stuff that we do on YouTube because video, obviously.
That's right.
So check out our Facebook page. It's True Crime Daily on Facebook. And we put tons of stories up there, and we love to hear from you. And so here's some of the this week's comments.
This was from a story with the headline, "College Fraternity Suspended After Video Shows Puppy Being Forced to Drink from Keg." Mm. In this video, a 21-year-old man who reportedly owns the puppy and another man hold the dog to a keg and force beer into its mouth during a party at the A.E. Pies off-campus house. The dog's owner could face an animal torture charge depending upon the results of the dog's blood work.
They did relocate the dog for those who are concerned. He's no longer living in this fraternity house. Yeah.
So Ann B. said, blood work or no blood work, they should be charged. And this happened in Hempstead, New York, by the way. They should be charged no matter what. That's cruelty to animals. We do have somebody that actually cursed. Christine H. said, college educated, quote unquote, shit for brains. Simple to the point. Edmund P., I believe the phrase is book smart but not life smart. Parents who aren't around much tend to forget their kids need more than schooling to get by in life.
These are good points.
And Roseanne S. said, post their names, stop letting them hide, and punish them, not just a fine. This hit a nerve with a lot of people.
I want to know the dog's name.
Yeah. But Benny V. went all out. Hey, you put down people with less education. You think the more education you get, the smarter you are? Got some bad news for you. The majority of drugs that are dangerous to people were made by intelligent and educated people. LSD, cocaine, crack, ecstasy, and many others. Then we go to other things invented by college-educated, intelligent people. All those weapons of mass destruction, the H-bombs, nuclear weapons of all kinds, chemicals spread on the crops we eat. Why so many recalls, especially since 3 years back, all came to be because of those with so much more education. Here we say this. He just keeps
going. Is this in all caps, by the way?
It was not in all caps, no. But
it seems.
I get what they're saying. They're saying that, you know what, if you're who invented the drugs, and that was the non-educated people, but that's not quite necessarily true.
I mean, these are
true.
All good points, but, you know, yeah. I'm sure that it's not just frat kids that
we'd
are
like you
feeding
to stay,
dogs.
We'd like to stay a little bit on topic beer. When it comes to, but you know what? If you can make an argument, go for it. But if you want to talk about a current issue in crime, there's going to be a lot of people, a lot of friends of yours to talk about it with on True Crime Daily.
It's true. You can check out that content on our YouTube and Facebook and TrueCrimeDaily.com, of course, for all our latest. Don't forget to download our weekly podcast, which you're listening to right now. We have it on Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. Also, if you have comments or questions about the show, call us up and leave a message at 888-548-9758. We'd love to hear from you. Be advised your recording may be aired in any of our future podcasts. That's 888-548-9758. Tell us what you think in your own voice. In the meantime, until next week, this is True Crime Daily, the podcast reminding you,
do not do crime.